Chapter 17 Encounters. It was darker than I can ever remember. The only light came from the stars, and some very distant yard lights that you could see if you moved your head back and forth so the trees no longer blocked them. It was close to midnight, and still warm. We were thankful there were no mosquitoes that night. Sometimes in early June, they can start swarming. I remember watching a colleague get out of his vehicle in Utah when the mosquitoes were bad. Within minutes, his blue jeans had turned a seething mass of gray. The two dogs we had brought along as biosensors were running around sampling the many smells of wildlife. Raccoons sauntered through frequently, and coyotes could be heard regularly, though not on this night. We had just arrived in Utah from Las Vegas, and this was the first night of watching. Position yourselves exactly in front of the left-hand window in the old homestead, the Canadian investigator had advised us. The week before, he had shot some beautiful infrared film of a very eerie, bright light that had appeared from that vantage point. Though he never actually saw the light, it had shown up on infrared film. But only one Kodak ektachrome frame showed the intense light in a sequence of four. So we knew if we were going to see anything in this location, it probably was going to be transient. The NIDS physicist and I gazed out on the field. Nothing moved. Even the dogs were silent. My colleague stood maybe 10 feet to my right. He had night vision binoculars. Down on the other end of the property stood two more intrepid investigators, also with night vision binoculars. When you click them on, everything became very clear, though in a bizarre shade of green. Then it appeared, without warning, no more than 75 yards to our left. A silent, brightly lit sphere of bluish-white light about the size of a basketball hovered, moving slightly as if swaying gently. The dogs, which were behind us, seemed to notice its abrupt appearance. The object was not more than 15 feet off the ground. It appeared to be bobbing slightly, and it was bright enough that I could see the grass lit up below it. There were no obstructions in our line of sight. The thing was definitely within our same small pasture. I could not hear any wildlife sounds. It was as if a blanket of silence had descended on the area. We stared, and just as abruptly, it was gone. Just as I had begun to train my camera on the object, it was as if somebody had thrown a switch. The dogs did not move. Immediately, we clicked on the powerful Maxibeam. According to the literature, you can read a newspaper at night from a mile away with the light of the Maxibeam. Shining it in somebody's eyes would bleach their retinas, so we were always careful. The powerful instrument is a favorite of military and law enforcement personnel. Nothing moved as the entire pasture was lit up in bright white light. Slowly we scanned the whole pasture. Nothing appeared out of the ordinary. We walked over to the spot where the object had appeared, and just as suddenly it disappeared. The dogs stuck close by our sides. They were not in the mood for playing. We searched the area quickly for a few minutes, but could find nothing. Slowly and warily, we walked back to our original position. My colleague was scanning the perimeters of the lush, tree-lined pasture with a pair of Generation 3 ITT night vision binoculars. These binoculars amplify ambient light both in the visible and, to a large extent, in the infrared. I was readying the manual camera with black-and-white infrared film when he exclaimed, "Jesus!" He was looking through the night vision binoculars, directly at the tree line, no more than 200 feet in front of us. All of a sudden, he said, "There's a huge black thing in the trees just in front of us, and it is moving north." That certainly got my attention, and the dogs as well. Both animals had taken up positions directly behind us, jammed into the backs of our legs and gazing fixedly ahead where my colleague was looking. I pointed my manual camera in the direction he was looking and began a series of long exposure shots. "It is big, and I'm not sure if it's in the trees or behind the trees," he said. "It is blocking out the stars." I kept the shutter open and began counting out about 20 seconds between opening and closing the shutter. The camera was mine, probably 40 years old, but capable of taking excellent shots. Experience told us to avoid the high-tech, idiot-proof cameras whose electronics had too often failed at the crucial moment. Every time I looked up to see what my colleague was reporting, I could see nothing except the dark shadows of the tree line directly in front of me. Without the advantage of the amplification of the low-level ambient light afforded by the night vision technology, I was looking for a black something against a black background. I decided to focus only on my camera work. "It's still moving," he was muttering. Then, all of a sudden, "It's got me," he yelled. "It's saying, we are watching you." Then, there was silence. I kept taking increasingly longer exposures to try to catch whatever he was talking about. I could not see what was causing him such intense anxiety. My colleague's frantic actions and tone of voice increased my adrenaline. I knew that if something out there in the dead of night wanted to harm us, we were sitting ducks. Then he said, "It's getting smaller." Then, "It's gone." Over and over, he kept muttering, "Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ." I asked him what had happened. He was still shaken. "Something big was in the trees just in front of us. It blotted out all the stars through the binoculars," he declared. "It took control of my mind. It told me it was watching us." He sounded very confused and bewildered. I'd worked closely with him on numerous occasions and knew he was not prone to sudden flights of imagination. His distinguished academic career had not prepared him for anything like this. We stayed in the area about another 45 minutes. At one point, he went inside the old homestead and almost instantly started hollering. He had disturbed a sleeping bird that had suddenly flapped its wings in his face. I realized he was probably more upset than he was admitting, so we began to pack up the equipment. It was time to call it a night. We were silent as we trudged back the mile to the sleeping quarters. I kept thinking about the weird experience, the dogs, the invisible thing, the infrared. I went to bed that night, thoroughly puzzled. Throughout that summer, the NIDS team spent many long hours in the same area where the interaction had taken place with a telepathically hostile voice. We played cat-and-mouse games through the months of July and August with multiple different lights that appeared for a second or two, then vanished, then reappeared several hundred yards away. It was as if something intelligent was leading us on a dance as we rushed silently from spot to spot, always just slightly behind the fleeting orbs of light. Sometimes they appeared a few yards away in the middle of trees, or else they were a long way away. But we were never able to capture these nighttime game players on film. It was an exhilarating, but ultimately frustrating summer. Then, at the end of August 1997, on one of the few occasions when the NIDS team was not on the ranch, Tom encountered something truly bizarre. The cattle had been skittish and nervous for days. At about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the cows were startled by something and panicked. They stampeded south, breaking through the fence line that bordered the property. Over the summer, Tom had become weary from the cattle destroying the barbed wire fences. Of course, an animal has to be quite panicked to break into barbed wire fencing. The act usually draws a lot of blood and leaves lacerations, some of which may later become infected. Tom saddled up his horse and headed off after the cattle. They had broken into a neighbor's alfalfa field, and there was a danger that some of the animals would die from bloat. Eating growing alfalfa at this time of the year was very dangerous for cattle. The plants balloon in the rumen and cause such bloating that it sometimes kills the cow. Occasionally, a veterinarian may be called on to puncture the rumen with a sharp instrument so that the built-up gas can escape. This drastic action usually saves the cow's life. Tom hurried back to the property and called his teenage son for help. There was no way he could herd the 3 dozen animals out of the juicy alfalfa without some help. Over the years, Tad had become familiar with the ritual of herding panicked cattle back through the broken fence lines. The setting sun cast a beautiful golden glow over the restless animals as they twisted and turned to evade Tom and Tad on horseback. Tom noticed that the animals seemed fearful about going back to the ranch. For 2 hours, he and his son gradually moved the animals a few hundred yards to the north. Then something would happen, a ripple of panic would run through the herd, and they would charge blindly back south for several hundred yards and stop, breathing heavily while looking fearfully back the way they had come. At midnight, Tom was becoming frustrated. In an act of desperation, he tried a different tack. Instead of heading straight north, he and Tad drove the animals east first and then tried to take them north at a different point. He hoped to avoid the area that seemed to be driving the animals crazy with fear. The new path took them within 50 yards of a creek that bubbled noisily below a drop of about 15 feet. As he rode in the direction of the creek, a golf ball-sized blood-red ball abruptly flew into view and came directly at him from the creek. The object just missed the horse's head as it flew past, and Tom felt a stab of fear. The horse reared up and began to run. Tom had to fight to calm her down. Off in the distance, where Tad rode among the milling cattle, several were bellowing loudly in a crazed way. Tom looked to his left and saw one of his prized bulls chasing its tail and bellowing. The animal was plainly mad with fear. Then Tom saw the small red ball darting around the bull's head. Tom called Tad over and quietly asked him if he had seen anything. The boy responded by nodding dumbly. Tom could see the fear in his son's eyes. "Let's give it another try," Tom muttered. Suddenly, out of nowhere, another blood-red golf ball came straight at his horse. Tom lost control, and the horse took off in full flight, stampeding crazily toward a canyon. Tom knew the animal was not going to stop. 10 yards before the horse plunged over the edge of the canyon, Tom threw himself off the animal and landed heavily on the ground, only a few feet from the edge. Miraculously, the horse landed 20 feet below without obvious injury and began making the arduous climb back to the canyon lip. Tom, badly shaken, spent 10 minutes trying to coax the sweating horse into allowing him to remount. Out of the corner of his eye, Tom noticed two of the small red objects moving among the stampeding cattle. They seemed to be herding the animals in the direction of the creek. Tom and Tad saw what was happening, but it was too late. They tried to intervene as the cows and their calves stampeded over the 15-foot drop into the creek below. When the melee had settled, Tom could see several cows and calves lying prone. They had been trampled, and a couple had been injured in the fall into the creek. There was no sign of the red balls. The other animals had clambered up on the other side of the creek and were making their way, still bellowing but slightly less panicked, back toward the ranch. Tom called out to Tad, and together they began to herd the now pliant animals toward safety. After they were safely back on the property, Tom returned to the creek to survey the devastation. One cow was obviously in deep distress, a couple of calves had broken legs, and a fourth cow lay at her side, moaning and shivering. The loss was less than he had anticipated. In the distance, he saw the headlights of Ellen's truck as she pulled onto the property. Wearily, Tom turned his horse back. He saw it was past 2 a.m. The high-intensity struggle with the blood-red objects had lasted about 7 hours. Ellen parked the vehicle under one of the surveillance cameras, and Tom wearily climbed in. He felt exhausted. The moon had climbed over the horizon and was bathing the pasture in a dim light. In the distance, Tom saw Tad climbing over the fence line from the adjacent pasture, having tried to help the stricken animals in the creek. Suddenly, Ellen nudged him and pointed. Tom rubbed his eyes and followed his wife's outstretched arm. Hovering silently, about 10 feet over his son's head, was a blood-red ball. She screamed at Tad, but he was unaware of what was above him. Suddenly, the small red object took off toward them, flying low to the ground and directly into the glare of the truck's headlamps. Passing only a few feet from the truck and accelerating as it gained height, the object quickly vanished into the westerly sky. Tad approached the truck, looking puzzled. He admitted that he'd had an eerie feeling that he was being watched just before his mother screamed at him. Otherwise, there were no ill effects. All three sat silently in the truck as the clock ticked past 2:30. Tom then climbed out to check on some irrigation gates and said he would meet Ellen at the exit to the property. She nodded and gunned the engine. It took Tom about 5 minutes to change the irrigation ditch water flow, and he took the shortcut near the old ranch house. Just beyond the homestead, Ellen was waiting for him in the truck. As he climbed in, Ellen silently nudged him. Again, he followed her trembling finger. Just adjacent to the old homestead, a bright blue ball hovered maybe a dozen feet above the ground. It was a familiar sight, but they had not seen one of these objects in several months. Larger than a baseball, but smaller than a basketball, it emitted an intense electric blue light onto the nearby building as it hovered silently. It seemed to be watching them. Tom and Ellen watched back, silently, wondering what other surprises were in store for them. Suddenly, the blue object darted behind the building, out of their sight. No one said anything during the 25-mile journey back to their home. It had been another busy day at the ranch. One cow aborted, another calf died, and the others recovered slowly from the injuries inflicted that night. All the animals had been traumatized by the mysterious golf ball-sized objects. Tom had never seen these objects before, and hasn't seen them since. That morning, Tom called the NIDS team back to the ranch.